Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Praxis audio conference call in support of audit projects around the country. I'm Denise Eng, Praxis Safety and Accountability Audit Program Manager, and I'm joined on the line today by Lucy Pope, Praxis Technical Assistance Partner, who will facilitate today's call. And our special guests today are Sue Parrott of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission Against Domestic Violence in the state of Washington, and Jennifer Rose, who was co-director of the Santa Clara site for the OVW Safe Haven Supervised Visitation and Safe Exchange Demonstration Initiative. Both Sue and Jennifer participated as Praxis Technical Assistance Partners in audits dealing with complex systems and complex issues. Also on the line is Pam Wiener from Northwest Ohio, fresh from completing a very complex audit of several systems that make child custody determinations in that community. And as you know, today's topic is multi-agency and multi-jurisdictional audits and defining the audit scope. Welcome to all of our guests, and thank you in advance for taking the time to be with us today and to share your insights and experiences. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lucy, who will get us started on today's call.
Good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you are. Well, let me introduce our guests today. We have three guests today from across the country. Sue Parrott, she's been working against domestic and sexual violence for nearly 30 years and now works at the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission Against Domestic Violence in Bellingham, Washington. Sue served as the audit coordinator for the commission on four different audits. All of these were multi-agency audits ranging from 911, police, jail, prosecution, and probation. One audit looked at all the criminal justice systems in a rural community of about 5,000 people. Right now, Sue's in the middle of an audit on the Civil Order for Protection process, and this audit includes seven different agencies. Sue's been a member of the training team for Praxis Audit Institute, and three of her final reports are on the Praxis website. Jennifer Rose has done domestic violence work for over 20 years and is a consultant and Praxis TA provider living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She coordinated her first audit on supervised visitation in Santa Cruz, California, while she was with the Walnut Avenue Women's Center. This work in Santa Cruz was part of the National Safe Havens Demonstration Audit conducted at 11 locations in four states from 2002 to 2006. Since then, she's consulted on two additional audits. The supervised visitation audit reports can also be found on the Praxis website. You'll find lots of sample audits on that Praxis website. Pam Heyman-Wiener is an attorney serving as the Regional Domestic Violence Coordinator with Legal Aid of Western Ohio. She also coordinates the activities of the Family Justice Center of rural Northwest Ohio. Over the last year, she's been the audit coordinator on a national demonstration audit on child custody and domestic relations court. This audit included all agencies that touch custody in court cases, including CPS, child support enforcement, child advocates, parenting classes, and more traditional participants like prosecutions and the law enforcement. The audit team was a combination of local practitioners and staff from the Battered Women's Justice Project and National Council on Juvenile and Family Court Judges. Their report is currently in the final stages and should be public soon. We hope, huh? Today's call is about multi-agency audits. Those are audits of more than one agency or jurisdiction at a time, or audits that are touched by multiple agencies. Our guests will be focusing on three main themes that are designed to help those thinking about whether that multi-agency audit is the way to go. These themes are going to be defining the scope of the audit, building a multi-agency audit team, and issues the audit coordinator could think about for the audit work itself. Before we get into these details, though, I'm interested in what our presenters would say is the benefit of a multi-agency audit. What's the highlight? Sue?
Oh, I would say one of the highlights has to do with, maybe it's the buy-in piece, which is that I think if you're only doing one agency, they may feel like they're in a spotlight. And when you have multi-agencies, it may minimize that. If there's, again, it all depends on your political climate. And if there is concern about it, a multi-agency audit may feel like, okay, this is doable. It's a group of us. We're all in this together. So that's off the top of my head, one benefit.
So that potential is there, yes.
Yep.
Jen, do you have the benefit?
Sure. I think the benefit often comes in the outcome, right? Of this work brings people together in a really unique way. And I think when thought through, when people are intentional about how they come together and what they decide they want to look at, it builds relationships, I think, in a really remarkable way. And I've seen the success of these types of audits bring about a desire to continue working and looking together at how to improve responses.
Okay.
And so I think the outcome can really be the benefit of this process.
Very powerful, yes.
Yeah.
And Pam?
For us, we do have a very strong coordinated community response, and I think what the audit does is provide a tool for bringing that to the next level. It's probably the most powerful tool I've experienced for being able to look at the intricacies of the interrelationship among agencies that you don't necessarily get from conversation, talking about policies, procedures, but from actually examining those policies, procedures, the laws, and their interrelationship among agencies.
Interesting. Thank you. So those are some of the highlights from these folks who have spent a lot of time working on this, and let's start talking then at the beginning, at our first theme, which is defining the scope of the audit. So your community or CCR wants to improve your response to victim safety or bad or accountability. You may have noticed a particular trend that you want to learn more about, or there's been a problem that your CCR wants to address. How does your community decide whether to audit one sector of the system or several agencies in the same audit? How do you determine how broad the scope of that audit should be? So we'd like to open this conversation with a discussion of how a community can begin to think about an audit and identify an audit focus. Jen, you've worked with large audit projects, a national audit project. What do you suggest leadership needs to talk about to define the scope of an audit?
Sure, I think, and I want to encourage folks to if you have questions. I think sometimes the beginning of this process, we don't even know what questions to ask. So once people get started talking, I think really want folks to engage in this conversation with us. But the things that leadership really need to be considering and doing revolve around who. Okay, let me back up a minute. I think one of the most important pieces is making sure that everybody who may be a part of this multi-agency or multi-jurisdictional audit is sitting at the table, and that before any larger decisions are made or the full definition of what it is you want to do happens, that you have those participating groups sitting at the table. You may not have their full buy-in yet. You may not have... they may not totally understand what they're sitting at the table for, but that front-end engagement of the leaders and the systems that you want to look at collectively need to be there on the front end. I've seen, you know, we want to talk about both the benefits but some of the challenges too, so that as you're thinking this through, you're able to identify for your own community, you know, maybe this is too big. Maybe we need to start smaller. Maybe we don't have some of these important tenants lined up to start in a good way. And I think from the very beginning, making sure that the right people are part of the leadership and are part of the decision-making process is a key piece to the success of a multi-agency or multi-jurisdictional audit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been part of audits that, you know, at the end what we found was some of the ways that victim safety was being compromised was in this particular part of the system that we were looking at, but these folks weren't really at the table. And then when we got to the end of the audit process and we're making recommendations and thinking about change, it was hard to then think about how do we then engage these people now and not make them feel like we're just scapegoating or we've decided they're the challenges are versus kind of what we know about audits, which they demonstrate kind of all the different ways the system maybe fails victims.
You're talking about the broadest possible audience.
Yep. Because then you can narrow down. You know, it's better to have people there on the front end, and then potentially, you know, as you narrow your focus and narrow where you're going, they may be involved in more peripheral ways, but to have them there on the front end, I think, is essential.
Okay. Even as an informational piece.
Well. Even as an informational piece, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm a big advocate for all the front-end work you can do in thinking through this process and bringing people together and really clearly defining what it is you think you want to do. You can't, although you want to be open to how things may come in as you start engaging in the process of the audit, I think from the beginning, if you can really be precise and have thought through a lot of the different pieces initially, you will have more success throughout the process. For example, like I said, making sure the right people are at the table, taking the time to really sift through together what it is you want to look at, the reason, what is the purpose of bringing this group together and looking at these multiple systems. So really defining the purpose and the vision of the audit, I think, helps from the front end to really lead the process in a much smoother way, because, you know, when we bring all these people together and we really engage in the process of looking at these systems in this intentional way, if from the beginning we've began those relationships and building that trust and included people in a complete way, I think it helps things run more smoothly. When issues come up, when challenges come up, you've congealed the group and the intent together. Where sometimes this can be a champion who wants to move something forward. Without the group, I think you can have a lot of unintended consequences from this process.
So you're having this discussion with a very broad, as broad as you need to have, group of leaders. And I guess I'm wondering about the agenda for that. I mean, how do you then begin to, you define what you want the result to be, what the purpose is first, and then decide which, whether it's a single agency or multi-agencies? I mean, how do you get to that question of whether you do the entire system or just one piece of the system?
I think, and Sue or Pam, please feel free to chime in too. I think that together you can help to see whether or not you have some of the things in place that are necessary to really explore the whole system, or maybe it be a better decision to start smaller. So what are the resources? What who is available to be involved in this process? What are kind of the big issues, right? Many of us have coordinated community responses, and that's going to probably be the place where this conversation starts. And, you know, some of you talked about being from, whether it was a commission or a coordinated response group that is thinking about doing an audit. I think that those leaders sitting at the table, the folks who are involved in that, together thinking about what it is you want to look at, sort of the reason for the audit, what it is you think or are perceiving needs some this type of exploration, I think by having those conversations with the larger group, you can start to define whether or not the group is in a place and has, right, the capacity, has the resources, has the relationships. I think relationships is a big is a big piece. If you're going to do this multi-agency, multi-jurisdiction type audit, those relationships are going to be important to the success of the audit, because as these issues come up in audits, as you run into challenges, as you need to capitalize on certain resources, you have to have the whole group. Like, for example, the audit we did in California, it was multi-agency and multi-jurisdiction. Well, we were primarily looking at supervised visitation, but we were looking across Santa Clara County, Santa Cruz County, and Monterey County. And three very different places. And we had leaders in each of those places who really were at the table, who were part of this demonstration initiative, who came to the table, who brought a lot of what we needed to be able to be successful in looking across these different jurisdictions with different players, with similar systems that operated very differently. And we, you know, really worked on the front end to figure out all of the different pieces. For example, the who was going to be involved, how resources were going to be allocated and sort of divvied up, commitment, and what it is we needed to do this in the most meaningful way. And that front-end work helped us, although we ran into challenges. People drop out, people's time shifts for a number of different reasons. Those things happen. But on the front end, I think all of the work we did to really define and think about how we were going to do it as a larger team helped in the success of the outcome.
That was our experience, too. This is Pam with our audit in Henry County of custody issues. It was came about as a result of conversations from our strong coordinated community response, and the judge was raising questions about why are so many victims dropping their protection orders, and why are so many victims returning to their abusers, and how come I'm seeing cases coming down the pike a second and third time when they came through as consent entries and I never knew there was domestic violence, and a lot of questions as to how the court got information to make the decisions they did. And that's what got us into looking at then what our audit question was, and that's how the legal system takes domestic abuse into account in the resolution of child custody and access in ways that protect the safety and well-being of children and adult parties while also assuring due process. And so what we had to look at first then was what are the doors to custody to identify who the other agencies or systems are that we need to look at if we're going to get to an answer. And so some of those systems and agencies included the domestic violence programs, child support enforcement, children's protective services, job and family services, legal aid, private attorneys, and also then how does the court get information from persons within the system or from these agencies. And that would also then bring in evaluators like guardian ad litem and custody evaluators and parenting coordinators and mediators. And so from defining the problem to where the doors were and how information came to the court or was shared among the agencies involved, we were able to identify who should be at the audit table and a part of the team.
And so, Pam, as soon as you mentioned children, child custody, the agencies that might be involved with that kind of flow out and become very apparent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so ours didn't stem from, we're going to do a safety audit, what should we do it on? It came from these conversations of very troublesome issues, and then that became an avenue in which to get better answers.
And so did you have everyone involved with child custody at that kind of preliminary thinking, or was it the CCR the normal members or the traditional members of the CCR had the conversation and made the...
It actually started kind of one-on-one with the judge raising questions with the domestic violence advocates, with the legal aid attorneys, with the guardian ad litem, different people in the system. And then that came about then as a conversation with the group. And that was probably, maybe 6 months down the road from beginning to identify these trends that were going on. In realizing that this is a problem. This isn't just isolated cases. This is a problem, and that's when it went before the CCR and trying to figure out how we were going to address that. And that's actually when we called in Praxis and the Battered Women's Justice Project, not as a safety audit, but to say, how do we figure out what's going on here? And then that ultimately led to, hey, maybe this would be a good topic to do a safety audit around it, and then getting involved with the demonstration project.
Well, and so I'm wondering, I'm curious, Sue, what Jen and Pam are describing. You went into the city of Blaine in Washington, population about 5,000, so it's a small rural community. When you went into that community, was it the same sort of process to decide the scope, or did you decide, well, the town is small, there's very few players, so we might as well do the whole system?
Yeah, that was the case.
Oh.
And in this case, it was a police chief who, based on two previous audits that we'd done, he really wanted to be a kind of a model and an example for one of the smaller cities in our county. And so he really made the offer and said, I'd like for our city to have an audit. And exactly, because the you know, this is a community where you have contracted prosecutors who come up there a half a day a week. So it's a very small system. So to do all the, you know, the law enforcement, prosecutor, to probation, to the court in one audit was not very complicated at all.
Well, and that brings up this issue of how do you know that you have enough resources or the capacity to complete a multi-agency audit? Maybe the reverse is true in the city of Blaine. I mean, do you have the resources to conduct single audits, you know, over the next 5 or 6 years? Wouldn't it be more effective in terms of cost and time to do a multi-agency audit in that kind of circumstance?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
Sorry. No, I'm suggesting, you know, how, my question is, how do you know if you have the capacity and how many agencies are too many for your community or your CCR to actually handle? If that was the city of St. Paul, would you really do all of those jurisdictions, all of those agencies? Where in a town the size of Blaine, 5,000 people, it's almost more efficient to do all of them at once.
Right, that's right, yeah.
So how would you decide? I mean, do you decide by the amount of grant money that you get coming in? How do you know if you have the number of people and the time and the money to get this done? Or should you do one at a time and break them out?
Yeah, that's right. That's a big question. You want me to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Okay. Well, and probably we can all talk about resources from different angles, but separate from the buy-in piece, if you're thinking primarily about resources and capacity, and I'll just focus on that a little bit, I think the first thing is you have to understand what the audit process is and what's involved in an audit. The work that one needs to do, and it's usually the audit coordinator to, you know, understand each system, and then the team ultimately mapping, you know, the system, how a case flows through that system depending on what your focus is, how large that particular system is. Your question might, depending on how broad or narrow your question might be, so you might be looking at a very specific type of case, like I think Nikki is talking about, Native American.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, you maybe can do more systems because you're looking at a very narrow piece, whereas if you're in a very large jurisdiction, you know, looking at all of law enforcement and all of 911 and all of prosecution is going to be a lot.
And yet, excuse me, Nikki's talking about culturally appropriate services, so we could get into a different kind of complexity there.
That's correct.
So then volume, you're talking about content being complex.
Yes, that's right. And I think actually any audit has that potential to get complicated, and it's always so important. I think going back to what Jennifer was talking about is, you know, kind of what have we really chosen to focus on here? So a capacity issue comes, if you're thinking about resources and capacity with multi-agency, multi-jurisdictions, it's simply more players to work with, more players to connect with, more players to get buy-in from, more players to keep updated, more systems to understand, collect information about, and then the same with your team members, more systems for your team members to understand. You may need a larger team because maybe you're going to need to do more observations, interviews, et cetera. So that's kind of getting into some of the audit work that's involved. But
So that takes some real thought about what, Jen, you were saying about the three counties coming together and the leaders really mapping out how many players we're talking about, how many jurisdictions, how many systems, and really trying to put some, at least numbers, to some of those questions.
Yep.
Will it work, or can we really do this? Yeah.
I think the strength of the relationships among the community leaders is going to play a big role in resources and capacity, because if you have somebody who's not fully on board, the amount of time and energy it's going to take to keep that person involved in the damage that that person could potentially do to the project in either not disclosing information or withdrawing from the project early or creating a lot of havoc with the group is something that needs to be considered too, because I think you want to be sure that you've got a strong team when you go into the project and define your project in such a way that it's bringing in those agencies.
And we're going to be talking about buy-in in a minute, but what I'm hearing you talking about, Pam, then is even if you want to do, say, three different jurisdictions, if you have the judge or the prosecutor in one of those pieces saying, I'm not interested, then you rethink that. But that really needs to be seen as a resource that affects your capacity.
Yes.
Okay. Any other thoughts, or should we open up the lines and see if folks have questions?
Let's see if folks have questions.
Okay. Stephanie, are there any questions in the queue? And remember, you can push one, and Stephanie will help us unmute you, or you're welcome to send an email to Denise. Any questions, Stephanie?
At this time, if you do have a question, please press the number 1 on your phone at this time. Be sure to press the number 1 only once. If you press it more than once, you will remove yourself from the question queue.
Okay. Okay. Then let's go on and kind of touch on the audit questions. So we've got this meeting, we've got the CCR, we've had the conversations. What about the audit question? Is there something special? Does that automatically emerge? The focus of it emerging, is it whether it's a narrow focus, whether it's something like child custody issues might be involve many people automatically and be a broad issue. Is that organic? Does it just come out of these meetings, or is that something you have to push on? Pam, you have a very ornate question. audit question. I mean, how did that happen?
It evolved with the group. I mean, I think we were able to identify who needed to be at the table based on understanding that we wanted to look at child custody and, you know, what was impeding the ability of the court to have access to information to make decisions that were safe for victims and their children. I think what evolved was with the whole group discussion and mapping out systems was, how do we create the safety audit question so that it's victim-centered and not system-centered? And so with the focus being to protect the safety and well-being of children and adult parties while assuring due process. And so the beginning part, as far as looking at the custody issue or how cases come in and how they're how information is processed and families go through the system, I think that was kind of there on the forefront. But it did take us a period of a few months as we were going through the audit, to continually refine how we actually formulated our audit question. So we had enough of it to be able to do, I mean, to get started, but I think in terms of making sure that what we were looking at is the protection and safety and well-being of children and adult parties, keeping that the focus was really important to continually examine as you go through the process.
Well, and I'm wondering if with a multi-agency or multi-jurisdiction audit, when you know that you have a very a lot of different players that are going to be involved, do you then keep going back to the resources and keep focusing and narrowing that question? Where if you were, say, in a city of 10,000 people and you wanted to look at law enforcement and just say we want to look at victim safety in law enforcement as a very broad audit question, does that mean something different in a multi-agency audit, that you have to be more careful to tie that into resources and capacity? Or do you even worry about that?
Well, I think for an audit like we did, where we're looking at how the legal system takes domestic abuse into account in the resolution of child custody cases, it's very critical that all the key players that are involved in that process are a part of the process. And I really believe that the audit would not have been accurate had we not had the buy-in of all of the key agencies and system evaluators that impact that outcome. And that included defense attorneys and those who represent batterers in the civil legal system. Because if you don't have the full balance to be able to examine the issues, you may miss it looking at it from the advocacy side, or your outcomes may not have the buy-in from the full community. Okay. And so
you need to have a series of dialogues and to keep that question focused and mm-hmm. narrow enough and still accomplish what you need to. So
that's where that balance with, assuring safety and well-being of children and adult parties while also assuring due process came into the picture.
Thank you. Well, we want to spend the rest of the call on highlighting some key issues in building a multi-agency audit team and the audit work itself. Once you have the scope, once you have your question, this isn't going to be a complete discussion given our time frame, but we hope we can offer some insights that will help your initial decision making around the scope of the audit, so you have a sense of the kind of key issues that will be coming up as you pursue a multi-agency or multi-jurisdiction audit. So once you've decided to conduct the audit and you've agreed on a focused audit question, you'll need to build an audit team and get some buy-in from those involved. We've touched on that just a little bit, but Pam, you coordinated that audit that included multiple agencies. So what did you learn about how to get multi-agency buy-in?
Well, I think there's at least three key issues that I saw. One is when you're dealing with an audit of a single agency, you have an agency director who has control of the data collection. It's all internal to that agency. And so if you've got the director on board, you have access to the data and the staff and other information you need to do your audit. If you're dealing with multi-agencies, then you're dealing with multi-agency and system directors leaders. And what's going to be important there is that there's a much more public sense of this audit. If it's internal, the director has some control over how that information is used, how public it is, whereas if you have multi-agencies involved, then what you're doing well and what you're not doing well, even though that's not what we're looking at, we're looking at systems, but that become the agencies are much more vulnerable or may feel more vulnerable. So one of the pieces that I think is very important, and that's where working in communities where you have a coordinated community response is incredibly helpful, is that the agencies or systems that you're examining, there has to be a strong level of trust among those agencies that you can fully disclose problem areas and issues and be willing to expose policies and practices and procedures that may ultimately not have served well for the persons that are going through the system. And so that requires that the agency leaders are willing to expose themselves. And that means that agencies that may be competing for funding
mm-hmm.
are exposing themselves. People who, especially in any community, but small communities where your reputation is on the work you do, and if it's going public among community leaders who rely on agencies they refer to, it can affect the services that you provide,
yeah.
or whether it impacts the relationships you would have with individual staff persons within an agency. So
mm-hmm.
So that to me is one of the big differences between the single and the multi-agency and who you're going to get at the table in terms of the audit. The second piece is with the single audit, you're looking internally at how the policies, procedures, laws, different things impact how that agency provides services to victims or whatever your audit question is. Whereas with a multi-agency, you're looking at not only how it affects your program agency system internally, but also how your program policies, procedures, practice in its interplay with other agencies or systems impact the services provided in the other agencies. So there's this interdependency that where a policy, practice, or procedure may be very beneficial within an organization, once that victim gets tied to another system or agency, that same policy may be very detrimental. And then the third piece is when you're dealing with a multi-agency audit, there's one primary agency, or at least our experience, one primary system, which was the court system, and the agencies that were interdependent with the courts or the outcome of custody cases in the court have either a very small peripheral piece or may have a larger piece, but you're only looking at that piece of the puzzle within those other agencies that impact on the court's decision. And so it's not a full audit of all of those other agencies. And so being able to keep your focus on what the question is, keep the information you're auditing within each of the agencies focused on that audit question is something that for us we had to keep coming back to, so we didn't start saying, oh, wow, that was interesting, let's see where that goes within another agency. And I'll just give three examples on those, because in the first one, where we were looking at the buy-in from the agency leaders and not feeling threatened politically or funding-wise, we had to get some of our players, for example, like Child Support Enforcement Agency or Children's Protective Services or Job and Family Services, domestic violence programs, if they didn't have a strong trust with the court, they may feel that they could be exposing themselves to something that could be detrimental to their program if they participated in the audit. That wasn't the case. There was a strong working relationship with the judge in those agencies, so we had a lot of buy-in. On the second piece, where we look at how policies within an agency may be positive or may be detrimental, but then how it carries over into the next agency. An example would be when a victim applies for public assistance, if they disclose domestic violence, if there's a policy in place then that the case is referred to Children's Protective Services for a review, that may stop some victims from reporting that they're victims at the time they apply for public assistance. Well, then what happens is, depending on the type of public assistance that they apply for, that means there's going to be a referral over to Child Support Enforcement Agency as a result of obtaining assistance. Well, now Child Support Enforcement Agency doesn't have any information about the domestic violence, and they don't have their own screening process for domestic violence. So now we're bringing the offender and the victim together to establish the child support, but also to have a conversation about whether or not there's an agreement on custody. And so if the victim is feeling coerced, intimidated, fearful, they may enter into an agreement that they never intended to, that's not safe for the victim and the children. Or if they don't agree, then the next step is that the case opens up as a custody case in the court, and it may start at mediation if the parties are unrepresented. And again, depending on the disclosure during screening, the victim may be with the perpetrator in mediation. So just from the person walking through one door can lead to opening the doors in all of these multiple agencies and ultimately in a custody order that can be very detrimental to the victim and children.
Right. And so do you talk about all these things, talking about buy-in, do you talk about this sort of thing up front? Are these things that a coordinator should just be aware of in the future, or do you just confront this and say, you know, to get buy-in, here's our agreements about this? How do you handle that?
Well, I think the first thing is that you need to have a coordinator who understands the interrelationship among the agencies, because you don't want to, like, have something come up 2 months into it that's like, aha, and somebody's feeling really exposed. And so two things. One, of course, we did have aha moments where people were exposed, but I think having the audit coordinator, one, understanding the interdependency, and two, having continual conversations around what is the goal. The goal is for us together to have a better system in place to protect the safety and well-being of victims,
right,
and their children. So you have to keep coming back to that. And if our goal is to be better and we're all interrelated, then it's not any particular agency or system's problem. It's all of our problem that we need to come up with a solution. So even though it was at some points painful to see things exposed, at the same time, once it was turned around to say, wow, now we can see why this and this and this happens, how can we fix that so that,
right,
we can better protect victims and keep bringing the focus back, it made it an exceptionally exciting endeavor.
Yes, and complicated and complex, both personally and in terms of the audit work itself, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Jen, I was going to ask you, you know, so you have buy-in and people at the table. When you think of building an audit team, you talked about this three counties in California.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is important for audit leadership to think about in building the audit team and those first steps kind of paving the way? How would you construct an audit team?
Well, I think, of course, you want to have representation from the different systems, jurisdictions that you are going to explore. I think that's, of course, a really important piece. And then for those people, like, it was important for us to have upfront conversations about time, availability, and capacity for who was going to be participating.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was important to have people, you know, with a good knowledge of the systems and, in particular, supervised visitation that we were going to look at. I think that was an important piece. You know, ironically, many of us didn't know each other very well. We had just sort of come together as this demonstration project, and we were lucky that we were able to build good relationships. However, in hindsight, I think if having some existing relationships with among the audit team members is very helpful.
Can you create that artificially? In a small town where Pam's talking about, we were talking about rural last week, and
right,
everybody knows everybody and has personal and professional relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both a benefit and it can be a challenge. I think in a smaller community where everybody knows each other or everybody is connected both professionally and personally in some smaller communities to some extent, I think it poses some challenges.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any immediate solution. I think each community acknowledging those relationships, kind of what they mean. You know, in some small places, you have a person who does a particular job and in that particular system. And so, really putting that stuff up front and deciding as a team how you want to address some of those issues, if and when they come up, I think is helpful. We, of course, were much larger. You know, we were the Bay
sure.
Area of California to
sure.
some extent. So that wasn't a challenge for us. But I think that many of us, I mean, I realize Houston, Texas is not small, but some of the other folks who spoke up, I think they are a little bit smaller regions. And so I think some of those issues will be alive and well. And I think on the front end, really deciding as a group, what's the process going to be for us to come together and address these issues as they come up, I think is an important piece. And real quick, back to sort of this larger question you asked of structuring a team, I think making sure, you know, there's representation, making sure there's time from those people who are involved. I can't emphasize that enough. I think, and probably Pam and Sue could speak to this too. It's on the front end, people get real excited and there's a big commitment, and then sometimes in the audits, it ends up being, you know, a couple people who carry it in the end.
Oh.
And so I think really getting that investment and that buy-in and being realistic about those commitments helps keep a larger team intact, which helps you get your work moving in a good way.
Exactly. And they're spending a lot of time together, and relationships are formed as you go. So
yeah.
And for us, that we had the judge asked people to come to the table as opposed to the audit coordinator. And that was huge. When people feel accountable to the judge, it feels very different than somebody else who may not have as much power in the community. And also, we had a very small community with a lot of people with one-person agencies. And so I think that was the strength of our audit, because people did have very strong personal and professional relationships. And so they could keep things in perspective. I think that's also the challenge, if they don't, of trying to create audits in places where those, in small communities, where those relationships aren't that strong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be...
Well, it's interesting, Pam, you touched on this idea of the role that the judge is kind of a central figure. You've talked about several times. And Sue, you had talked about this idea of champions, and that sometimes an audit question might be narrowed by whether or not that agency or jurisdiction has a champion, someone who's very excited or concerned or plays a role of pulling people together. I think for you it was your police chief?
Right, that's correct. The very first one, yeah, which made a. I think in our first audit, it was most important that we had a champion, and it was the success of the first audit that then laid the groundwork for the rest of our audits. And it's almost like success is implied in a sense, because people saw the outcome of that, and we had a police chief who was really sane. This was worth it. I was scared, but it was really worth it. And but of course, still, you, as we've already talked about, you want that champion. But I think in the first one for us, it was really very helpful.
And the idea of champions does seem to be a common thread that moves through this. I'm also watching the time here and want to, Stephanie, stop and see if there's any questions in the queue, or Denise, if you've had anyone email in. Are there any questions at this point?
At this time, if you do have a question, please press the number 1. That will place you in the question queue.
Okay. Feels like we're covering a lot of territory here in a short amount of time.
And we don't have any questions emailed, but you know, one of the things that I wanted to say is that if people want to talk with me about their audit projects outside of this call, you know, then absolutely, we, you know, please email me or call me at Praxis. I'm thinking in particular about you folks down in Houston, who it sounds like have bitten off a pretty big big piece of the pie here, and so I think that it's going to be really important to have a very planful approach to your audit project. And so if you or anyone else has any questions that you'd like to talk to with the whole group or get the feedback from our presenters about, it's a really good time. Otherwise, we can talk later outside of the call too.
Okay, we do actually have a question in the queue at this time.
Great.
And that comes from Harris County Domestic Violence Coordinating Council. Your line is open.
There we go, in Houston.
Thank you. It's not so much a question as it is a comment. My colleague and I are sitting here feeling very overwhelmed.
Yes.
It is a lot of information, and I just wanted to say we appreciate the opportunity to call you, and thank you for giving that shout-out, because I'm sure we will.
Great. Well, and it can. I mean, we're really condensing, you know, months and months and months of work and experience in a very short time frame. I think that our goal, too, is just to give you that kind of overview so that you maybe can focus questions or see a little bit into the future and how you might think about that now. But another common thread through all of our audit calls has certainly been the use of praxis and consultants to work through the process. Most of the audits that I've heard about have used some kind of consultant or had praxis come in and maybe help focus that audit question, help the leadership kind of decide whether or not they really do have the capacity. So you are not alone. There are resources there, and I would certainly encourage you to take Denise up on her offer.
We certainly will. And actually, we're very lucky in that we've been given a grant from a foundation to allow us to pay some consultation fees.
Perfect.
So we will be contacting Denise.
So it does, you know, because, you know, it's setting things up and laying a firm foundation will serve you well in the long run. So we want to take just the last maybe 10 minutes here and touch on the audit work itself and what challenges a multi-agency audit might raise for an audit coordinator. So, Sue, you've been the audit coordinator on your fifth audit right now.
It's my fourth.
Is it your fourth?
Yes.
I want to add one more to your list. Can you get us started thinking about some of the challenges that coordinators might want to consider ahead of time as they plan work strategies?
And I did talk about a few of these before.
Yeah.
Again, it does really help to understand the audit process and all the steps of an audit to really be able to think about what might be challenging, you know, is multi-agency the way to go, knowing that this is what an audit takes. And I always like to say that even though it's way at the end, you know, you want to be thinking about implementation as well. And, I mean, all this comes back to the beginning and the buy-in. It's like, if you do multi-agency, is implementation going to be easier or harder? Single agency, easier or harder? I don't know. You know, that answer is going to depend on your community and capacity and how much energy there is to work on things. But the more agencies you audit, the more systems you look at, you're going to have probably more recommendations that deal with either different agencies or across agency, and they might be more complicated to implement. But I think just a couple things. My point of view, I've only done multi-agency audits, and this one I'm doing now is particularly more complicated, and I'm not sure exactly why that is, but clearly, you know, there's more work for the audit coordinator when there are more agencies involved, and that's all the way from the buy-in to the understanding that organization, that agency, to keeping that agency informed and on board throughout the process. And it requires team members to learn more, in a sense, because they're needing to understand all these different systems as well. For us, there was also a question of how do you structure your audit team when you're doing multi-agency audits. And again, that might depend on your question. This is really down the road for people, but, you know, do you have team members focus in on one agency or multiple agencies? So for me, that's always a bit more challenging with a multi-agency audit. Right now, each of my team members are needing to understand four different systems because we're following the protection order process through from when the victim initiates the petition up to law enforcement service and civil standby. And so one team is looking at four agencies through that process and another three. So it's requiring a lot on their part, and I can see the information overload for them. And so the role of the coordinator becomes very important. And I think going back to what Pam said earlier, too, about first of all keeping the focus, because in our case we're looking at a process within the courts. There's many other aspects to the courts, but we don't need to go there, so it's helping your team keep the focus. And anyway, letting them have the information overload, but also being the one to pull it back together and say, okay, let's find those areas that we really, really want to focus on and understand those completely.
Right, right.
So let me see if there's just anything else about...
You had touched the other day as we were talking about this topic about report writing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and
because I think that sometimes, as we're in the midst of all this for us, that the audit process really is gathering information, identifying gaps, making recommendations for improvement, and that the audit process is kind of the data gathering, that there really is implementation,
right.
Another whole step of this.
Yeah, and I think not everyone chooses. Every community chooses to do a report. We have, because that's been a way we can document the findings and the recommendations. And some of the challenges that have come up in doing a multi-agency audit, but, you know, in some ways I guess it would come up if you were just doing one audit. For example, we audited two different prosecutors' offices in one audit. One prosecutor's office, we really didn't have many findings. There were definitely some. The other prosecutor's office, there were lots of different findings. So I think to be sensitive, I had to think about ways to craft the report so that it looked not necessarily balanced, but just being sensitive to those differences and finding ways to maybe find broader themes that both agencies would fit under rather than just highlighting each department and one saying, oh, look, we only had five, and the other said, but we had... 20 recommendations. So that was just
mm-hmm.
something that came up.
Yeah. The politics and a sense of some of the things that Pam was talking about with trust and your reputation in the community and all those things kind of do follow.
Yeah.
This is Pam.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't think we could have done the audit without having gone through the audit training up in Minneapolis and having the technical assistance from Praxis and the Battered Women's Justice Project. I mean, for us, those were absolutely essential because there is a structure to the audit. And while getting the information off the internet and the website is really helpful, to understand how it plays out in practice is something that you get from going to the Safety Audit Institute. And
mm-hmm.
the more of a team that's working together that can go there, whether it's, you know, two people or five people, preferably more, because one, I think it helps get the excitement and the buy-in and understanding where you're going in the process. But at least a few people there who can then bring it back and do a training for your local group. That's maybe a shorter version, but similar to what you got in the Institute. But then as far as report writing, again, it really is bringing it back into the framework of the safety audit structure, which may be difficult to understand how to do the first time around. So looking at other reports is helpful that are online. But I think even more so is to have those conversations with the technical assistants.
Mm-hmm. And help facilitate that whole process, right?
Absolutely. Save a lot of time and get things right the first time.
Well, and so, Jen, are there areas or challenges that audit coordinators can plan for or the group can discuss ahead of time? Would you add anything to this discussion?
You know, I just would echo, in particular, some of the things Pam was just saying. I just think those pieces are really important.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything to necessarily add. I think,
Okay. Well, we have a couple minutes left, and let me ask again, Stephanie, if there's any questions or any calls in the queue. Does anyone have any questions?
And at this time, there are no guests in the question queue.
All right. We're just, are either overwhelming or totally clear.
I will say one thing. This is Jen, and Denise, you might say something similar. I do think using outside resources like Praxis is really helpful because, you know, this is although the whole idea of the access is of the audit is for it to not be personal about people, but we all are really, we do this work because we're passionate about this work and we care about survivors and their children and creating change in our communities. And sometimes having somebody who isn't in your community, sort of in kind of the day-to-day politics and emotion and hard work that all of you put into your communities helps sometimes move the group in places that you get stuck, right? And whether that's on a phone call or having someone come out or even just as the audit coordinator, having somebody to call and problem solve with. And, I mean, I would say my role as a consultant with communities has really been sometimes just that sounding board and that person outside of their everyday work who they could strategize, think through, talk with, and have someone to kind of help move things when they got stuck, I think is a really important piece. And so to really use the resources available to you will be a huge benefit, especially to coordinators.
Well, and it just seems like you're talking multi-agencies and complexity of systems, and I appreciate the discussion, Sue, about just teams of people, and you get overwhelmed in the middle of it, and you're looking at cases, and I imagine that the audit coordinator would be in the midst of all that, and it does get complex how to facilitate meetings, how to make selections, how to choose cases and data and coordinate materials, reams of materials. Mm-hmm. And so it is also really helpful, I think, to have someone who's had experience to help you through that. But
and I think sometimes when there's difficult findings that having the national team involved in being able to support those findings or provide credibility behind those findings, I think sometimes makes it easier for the community to accept it. And also I think having the national involvement really increases a greater statewide level of interest in findings.
And some of those findings might be about state or national frameworks that are some of these issues in place. So,
yep.
Well, Sue, was there anything more that you wanted to talk about with kind of challenges of the work itself when you're talking about multi-agency audits? Do you think that we covered what you needed to?
I don't think there's anything else.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of minutes left, and I just kind of wanted to see if our guests would have any final tips. We just talked about consultants and the availability of consultants, but any kind of you want to pull back with any major theme that you want to make sure people leave with?
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
I would say that, you know, if, you know, in coordinating your audit and thinking through some of the pieces that we've talked about today and that you may have learned at the Audit Institute and as you're moving forward, that the greatest benefit I've seen to communities of these audits is then the desire to do another audit. And I watched, you know, one community in particular really struggle through this process and, you know, before we were done with the first one, they were already coordinating the next and had new partners at the table and really could see the benefits to this work. And so I know this call may have seemed a little overwhelming and we wanted to be really balanced about presenting both, you know, both the benefits and the challenges. But if, you know, you do your front-end work, the extraordinary benefits of this process in your community really are long-lasting. So encourage you to keep with it and stick with it, but to be really thoughtful and intentional in the beginning and through the process.
Well, thank you, Jen. That's encouraging. Pam, did you have any final words of wisdom for us?
I think as you're going about the audit to keep yourself system focused and not personally focused, that the findings that come out of here can make tremendous change for whole communities if we can keep it out of the personal realm. And approaching findings with respect and dignity and owning it as a community to bring about change, I think oftentimes keeps people comfortable staying at the table.
Thank you. And Sue, do you want to leave it with don't give up? Sue's in the middle of her audit.
Well, and maybe the other piece I want to add, and I think there's always a way to make it work, whether it's single or multi-agency. And, you know, an audit is a prescribed process, but I think there's also a lot of flexibility in it, too, and use the technical assistance to figure out what are those pieces you want to make sure you keep in there, but maybe there's other places where, you know, you have a little flexibility too. So, because we're human and we all have limited capacity.
Yeah. That front-end discussion. Oh, thank you so much. I want to thank our guests for being there, and I hope that any of you who have questions or kind of as you move through thinking about this, reach out. There's lots of folks who would love to talk to you about it. This is all very exciting work. So, Denise, did you have any closure?
I just wanted to add a couple of comments at the end here. Thank you so much to all of our guests. It's a very, very interesting discussion. And just kind of for the participants on the call who are learning about audits or trying to decide how to approach the whole audit scope in your communities, it's just important to know that communities have taken a lot of different approaches to this work. Some have decided to do kind of one agency at a time or a particular focus on one agency at a time and will end with that, or some have done several agencies and it unfolds over several years. And then others will do this kind of multiple approach where they'll try to examine sort of an entire system or parts of an entire system at once. And kind of trying to decide which approach is the best for your community is sort of an art, you know, and it really requires a lot of thoughtfulness and a lot of nuance and a lot of connection to the community on the part of the audit coordinator as he or she leads that the community through that discussion. And of course, as others have said, help is always available from Praxis and our technical assistance partners to kind of help you think about how that will best work for you and best fit for your community. So I want to thank everyone for joining us today, in particular our guests Sue, Pam, and Jen for sharing your wealth of information and experience with us. Our next call is scheduled for 2 weeks from today, Wednesday, December 1st at 2 p.m. Central, where Pam Wiener is going to join us again along with Gabrielle Davis of the Better Women's Justice Project to talk about the audit that was recently completed in Northwestern Ohio on the child custody whole system in their community. And this promises to be a very, very interesting and important call. So we hope that you will be able to join us on that day. And I want to say good afternoon to everyone, and thank you very much for participating in the call. Bye.